Are we challenging our current children being raised up in society enough? Or are we causing them to be stunted in their growth with the way that we approach things? I did a post on TikTok where I was basically talking about how, in my opinion, children today, societally, we're seeing that these children are suffering. They're not hitting milestones. They're not, like, they're having developmental delays, but not in a sense of like disorders. Developmental delays in a sense of like social cues, and not just social skills and their ability to interact, but just not being able to think and advocate for themselves appropriately at their age level. And also this idea of being delayed in their ability to process information and to think critically. And I pointed to a few things that I think are the culprit. I think that the majority of it, in the umbrella that I would put all of these things under, is there is no longer this idea being enforced that we are responsible for ourselves. I just remember, even if you were a poor family or more impoverished, across the board, there was more responsibility expected for children. And not just in the home, but also outside of the home. There was more of a culture. When I was young and when I was in school, if your parents came to school because the teacher called you, your parent was not there to take your side and tell the teacher why they were wrong. Your parent was there to advocate for justice. And if you were on the side of injustice, your parent was on your tail. And I think that, again, all of these things contribute to what we see in our society now, that combined with obviously increased technology. So one of the things that I was talking about in a post was, I thought about a couple of examples. There was a lady I knew when I was younger, and I used to not like talking to this lady. I liked talking to her, but what I didn't like about talking to her was I realized at some point she would intentionally use words that were too advanced for me at that time, and she would never tell me what the words meant. And I was a curious kid, so I'd be like, oh, what does that mean? And she would not tell me. She would say, go look it up. And, you know, I had to go look it up in a dictionary, because at that time there were, like, we didn't have cell phones. I didn't get my first cell phone until I was in seventh grade, and it was made clear to me, this is not a device for your personal use. This is an emergency contact. This is for me to call you when you are away from me. And it was not even a smartphone. Like, y'all know when the phones first came out, they were like bricks. So it wasn't even something that I could use for my entertainment. I remember I had one little game on that phone, and that was pretty much it. So even if I had a phone at this time when I was talking to that lady, which I didn't, because this was about 4 years before that when I would have these interactions with her, I would have to physically go to a dictionary and look these things up. Now, of course, we had a computer at home at some point when I was young, but the only thing I was really playing on there was Gizmos and Gadgets and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. And I'm pretty sure that was the same experience for most kids. When I got to about middle school, I think, we had The Sims, and I would play The Sims, but like we didn't really, my brother had video games and things like that, but we didn't really have technology to the point where it was in our hand and easily accessible. If we wanted to play on things or be intrigued by technology, we had to get up and go sit in front of a computer screen or like in front of the TV or whatever, which I'm not saying that one is better than the other. I'm just explaining the difference in times. Another thing that I was saying, and I think that that was commonplace to have that experience with adults, where if you were a child, they would encourage you to take responsibility or accountability for your own learning, like having a conversation with an adult. And even if they didn't say, oh, go look that word up, just they might challenge you and say, well, what do you think it means based on what I said? Like, use your context clues. What do you think that means? And I think that the practice of that, the overall encouragement and patience of adults of our time was higher. And it didn't, being patient and being able to deal with kids now, it kind of looks like, oh, can you play with kids? Can you entertain them? Are you able to keep them smiling and happy? And I don't think that that's, again, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, but I do think that we get to a place where we overly accommodate children in a way where they're not even comfortable being bored, and they don't know how to stimulate themselves or entertain themselves without having something right in front of them. And another example that I thought about when I was thinking about like holding yourself responsible or accountable for your own actions, I gave the example of when I was younger, I was in school, and my dad came to get me from aftercare. And I remember I was always a pretty solid straight A student. I didn't even like getting grades lower than an A myself. But I remember it wasn't even a bad grade. I think I had gotten like a C or maybe even a B. And my dad, I didn't get in trouble. And it was never commonplace for me to get in trouble for having bad grades. I think because it wasn't something I always did. And I think the one thing I will say, my dad was not the type to overreact. And anytime I saw my dad in anger, I could say it was probably justified. He's easily irritated, but he's not easily angered. And I remember in the way that he would deal with me when I was younger, I used to think, like, as I got to be a teenager, oh, this is harsh. Like, I'm always in trouble. I'm always punished. But he was big on, like, respect and boundaries. And I had some teenage isms towards my stepmom. So that's probably why I stayed in trouble. But when I was younger, like in elementary school, I remember having this conversation with him. He picked me up and he saw the grade and he didn't tell me I was in trouble. He didn't nag me. He basically said to me, you told daddy what you want to do when you grow up. And in order to do that, you do have to be diligent about your studies. He didn't use the word diligent. I'm using that word. But he was basically telling me that I had to pay attention to my studies and I needed to be more engaged in what I was, you know, doing, making sure that I get the right grades. And he said, how do you normally get good grades? And I was like, I don't know. I study. He was like, yeah. So what are you going to have to do to get a better grade next time? And that was the end of that conversation. And we never had to have that conversation again because he came to me at the level that I was at and he charged me with the responsibility of doing better. He didn't tell me that he was going to take my TV away or like I was going to have to do this, this, and this. And again, I'm not saying that those means aren't effective, but I think that charging me to be responsible for my future at such a young age and making it a point to explain to me just how every little decision helped to compound over time, it was beneficial. And I even went into how when we were younger, there was this culture of we would hang out with people of different ages. Like it was common for us to hang out with our grandparents. And what were your grandparents watching on TV? Like Westerns and game shows. So even your exposure to certain things was higher, right? Like even the things that you see, the things that you experience, the things that you think about, the things that are allowed to enter your brain at that time, it was different. We weren't all just glued to our phones. And I think now it's even worse because not only do the young adults and teenagers and even preteens have cell phones, but it's very common for children of small ages to have tablets. And I remember my dad actually was the one that purchased tablets for my daughters. It was one of them had a birthday, he got her a tablet, and I was like, oh Lord. And then as soon as my second one had her birthday, he got her a tablet. And so they would have their tablets and I would let them watch little things on their tablets. But then I remember it got to a point where it just felt like they were constantly on them. And so I took them and I never gave them back. And I don't regret it because they're very creative and they're very engaged and they're able to think things through. I'm not going to say that they're the most intelligent children that you'll ever come across, but I think that their innocence is being preserved. I think that they are learning how, you know, they know how to be children. They know how to be fun, how to have fun, rather. They know how to make fun. They know how to create things out of being bored. And I think that that's a gem of childhood, to be able to explore those things and to not have so many outside filters and things that block them from that. And so I say all that to say that when I think about how we grew up, and we being people in my generation for the most part, I think about how now when we look at, oh, these children are suffering, they're doing so bad in school, they're doing this, it's a lot of things, including just very passive parenting. But I think one of the biggest things is this cultural shift that has allowed us to have devices raise our children more than we do. So it's common to just put your kid in front of a TV for a long time. And I'm talking about your small child. Before they even start talking, they're just watching screens for long periods of time so that the parents can have peace, or, you know, so the parents can get things done. And that's just something I worry about, because if we're not talking to them, if we're not being engaged with them, who is helping them to know right from wrong? And then there's this other element of, like I mentioned, we used to have to search for things, or we used to have to be very intentional about finding information in a way that I don't think current children experience. So where most of them have access to the internet, if they want to know something, they can very quickly look it up. But in them quickly looking it up, the internet is not the same as what an encyclopedia would be, right? So an encyclopedia, a printed encyclopedia, would be vetted information that you can trust the accuracy and source of. When you look something up on Google, it can be anything pertaining to that topic that anybody decided to write about that topic. And I don't think we're also teaching children how to research things thoroughly and how to think about things. So how bias works and how propaganda works and how when you're looking up something, it's beneficial to look at a few different takes of it so that you can actually come up with a truth. For instance, if you even go and watch, like, let's say you watched a segment that was reported on Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC. You would have to watch all three of those to get some version of the truth of what actually happened without the commentary that is typically going to be biased one way or another. And I think that I'm not just saying that you should teach that to your children and make them do all of these things, but I'm just giving that as an example of why this is problematic. But I think, I'm not saying that we should go back to all of these old ways, but I think the quick transition from being a kid into adulthood without having steps in between is partially what the problem is. Like, what I mean by that is you go from being, I don't know, like 6 or 7 to your parents get you your first phone and it's like an iPhone. And then you continue to have that phone from the time you're 8, 9, 10, you get another one at 11, 12, 13. And so all these years you have access to a smartphone, and who knows what you're doing on that smartphone when your parents aren't paying attention or when your parents aren't around. And it only takes for us to see something one time. I'm talking about children. It only takes for them to see the wrong thing one time for it to spiral into curiosity or something more serious. Like a pop-up can come up on your child's phone and next thing you know, they click it and they're watching porn or something, right? And it just takes one time for them to see that, to want to be intrigued and curious and try to find it again. And it's just a very slippery slope is what I'm saying. But to get back even to the conversation of how we go back from that or how we try to solve the problem, I think a lot of it has to do with not over-coddling children. And I know it sounds like that's what I'm trying to say, like, oh, we need to coddle them. We need to pay more attention to them. But I'm actually challenging us to be in a place where we're not coddling them, but we're just being present and we're challenging them. Because by us not being present, by us not challenging them, by us not giving them something to think about, teaching them how to think, challenging them on the ways that they do think, we just end up allowing the technology to take over and raise them. Even when it comes to like participation in things, I know so many parents that they just say, they don't want to do anything, so they don't do anything. And I know a couple parents that say they want to get their children involved in things, but the kid doesn't want to do anything. And as far as I knew when I was younger, that really was not an option for us. We had to find something. And I know in part it's like, oh, you want to do something that you find fun and entertaining and so that you can have a good time and learn new skills. But I think it was also just the idea of discipline and commitment to something, like play an instrument, go to dance class, go to basketball practice, go to track practice, go to choir rehearsals, something. Like you had something that you had to commit to, something that you had to be involved with. And it wasn't just, well, mom, I don't want to do anything. Because I could understand if you're a kid and you just don't like running and you're not athletic, that's fine. Like I say, you can play an instrument or you can sing in a choir or you can go to a crafting class or sewing class, something. But keeping them involved in things, but that doesn't necessarily look like always taking your children to do things either. Because something else that I mentioned was when we used to love going to grandma's house so much, it wasn't because grandma was taking you to go to Sky Zone or Chuck E. Cheese. We hardly ever went anywhere with my grandparents. Like we didn't always go places, but we loved being there. And I think that it had to do with just the presence, the fact that grandparents have a tendency to be more active and engaged, right? Like you're going to be doing things with your grandparents, like you're going to bake with them, you're going to cook with them. They have the patience to do things with you, to engage with you, to watch these TV shows, to answer your million and one questions. And it's so different than say if you're at home and mom is just like, oh, you got your iPad, I'm going in my room, go ahead and entertain yourself. Come back, you know, when you want a snack, you come and talk to mom. When you want something to eat, you come and talk to mom. But you're pretty much left to your own devices all the time. And don't confuse this to mean that I'm saying you have to watch every single thing that your child is doing. But I think that you would find there are good replacements to all of the technology. So for instance, even having, like, my children have company over now, y'all can probably hear them in the background of me recording this, but even in them being here, none of them have tablets or iPads or phones when they come here. And if they do have a phone, they have to bring it to me. But they find fun. They make forts. They play with dolls. They play school. They might be like, hey, can we go outside and play with the chalk? Hey, we want to go ride our bikes, whatever the case may be. But they're actively involved in doing things and not just coming together to sit around on a screen. And I think because of that, like, we think, oh, to be educated, you have to know a lot. But I think that as a child, part of that intellect, the discovery, thinking better, learning how to conceptualize ideas, it also comes through play and experience and interaction with other people. And I do think that that's something that's slowly just dying. Like, you see children younger and younger always on a device. And again, I understand you go certain places and you just give it to them so that they can shut up. Like, I've seen families that use them at dinner because they don't want their kids screaming. For me, I always try to just let the youngest that we have, oh my goodness, y'all, you will not understand, the boy is a riot. But I always try to let him just exist and be a baby before I try to distract him. This actually happened once, and this is such a side note. He was like having a terrible experience the last time we were flying, and this lady was so frustrated with him. Like, she was so annoyed. And I had to tell her, like, I don't really know what you want me to do. He's a baby. Like, I don't know. And I think sometimes even that happens because we're so used to kids just being docile. Like, we're just so used to them not being hyper and not acting like children that when we see a child acting like a child or doing something like a child, it makes us annoyed. And I think that that in part is also responsible for the lack of grace and the very low level of tolerance that we have for children in our society. Because even as people come about and they decide that they don't want children, I think some of them believe that because they don't want children, they're entitled to a society without children. So even that is interesting, not necessarily directly related to this conversation, but I think it's an interesting sidebar. But I often think about that, like, what do we do and what's the solution to this problem? Because what we can't do is just keep saying how bad it's getting, but we're not doing anything to change it. And somebody actually made an interesting comment about No Child Left Behind with President Bush. And I do remember that because I remember the time that it came out, and I remember it was like they had slogans and it was on all of the bulletin boards at school and it was a big deal. And as a child, you know, you think that that's great. Whatever that means, no child left behind, we all matter. But the commenter said No Child Left Behind was really just about not allowing a child to fail, not necessarily empowering them and giving them the skills to be able to succeed. And what she was referring to was how now you can't even really fail a kid. And I was thinking about how that's so crazy because it ends up breeding what I call a society of people who love participation trophies, where we all get the same result no matter what we do. So if you studied and you got good grades and you were very intentional about your studies, this person who did nothing is going to basically get the same outcome as you. And I'm not one to say that you have to work hard for anything, right? But I'm saying it breeds entitlement. And the way that that plays out in adulthood is you see so many young adults that are just they're entitled. But also they have this attitude about themselves where they feel like they don't owe anyone anything and everyone owes them everything. And again, I think that all of this ties together because if these are the children that grow up never having to work for anything, never having to be responsible for themselves, never having to understand or do the work of learning to understand how things work, then of course they're going to grow up to be entitled. And so the question remains, what do we do about this and how do we fix the situation, if anything? And I do think that it has a lot to do with, one, monitoring and limiting technology at young ages, but also limiting access to technology in ways that are inappropriate, because it's gotten so out of control now that I know most children, most high schoolers can't write. I know that they're using ChatGPT. I know that they're using other resources. And that's so significant, because writing is such an important factor of everything that we do. It's an important factor of adulthood and writing and communication. And I think even as we've gotten to the point where people are so reliant on AI that they'll run conversations through AI. They treat it like a therapist. They're like, hey, this person said this to me. How do I respond? So our ability, or these children's ability, these young people's ability to think and to be responsible for themselves, it's non-existent. It's not there. And in order for us to not continue to perpetuate this cycle going forward, I really do think that there are some things that we need to do. We need to be more active and aware as parents. We need to be more willing to be patient and present. We need to be more willing to be inconvenienced, because sometimes being there for your child and teaching them these things means slowing down and allowing them to be a part of the process. So like, there was a post about a man who said he was in the car at a gas station and he was on a business call, and he told his son, hey son, get out and pump the gas. And his son basically explained to him, like, you never taught me how to do that. I don't know how to pump gas, right? And so even that concept of being patient enough to teach our children to do something. And I know we've all been guilty of this, where you want to get something done quickly. You just want to hurry up. You don't have time to sit here and teach this one and show them how to do. I don't have time for that. But any pocket of time where you do have the availability, I would encourage you as a parent to use it and to be present and to teach your kids things and to show them how to do things, right? If there's something that your kid is always asking you to do for them, maybe one time you stop and you say, hey, you always ask me how to do this. Let me show you how to do it. Help you to help yourself, right? So that I'm not always the one doing it. And that has nothing to do with their education, but it has everything to do with their empowerment and self-responsibility. Because like I said, although when I began the conversation, I was thinking about like developmentally, intellectually, and academically how these children are really challenged. But I think that all those things tie together, because if you're never given the opportunity to think outside of your schoolwork, you're never given the opportunity to problem solve because somebody's always doing everything for you, or because when you do something wrong, you're not held to a standard. I remember my daddy woke me up in the middle of the night because I washed the dishes wrong, and he showed me how to do it, and then I had to rewash all them dishes. I never did that again because I never wanted him to wake me up out of my sleep to wash some dishes. Was I mad? Yes. And I think sometimes we allow ourselves to be like, oh, that's not right. I shouldn't do that. That's evil. And we, as we, the generation of parents that I'm in, we can be so wrapped up in all the traumas that we experienced and all, I never want to put my child through that, that we end up making it too easy for our children, and they don't have to do anything, and they're never challenged, and they never think. And so I think that there is definitely a conversation to be had there. I don't think it's one size fits all, but I do think that a lot of what we need to learn to do is to be more moderate in the way that we approach things, have more standards, take more time, be more present, be more patient, all the things, and just really lean into allowing our children to learn and to make mistakes and then to correct them over time. So that is all that I have for this episode. I will see you in the next one.